shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting From The Lip with me, John Gaunt, on Sputnik International. Just been setting up and I had a quick chat with my guest off air and he said, blimey, there's a lot to talk about, which is like the understatement of the year. News and British politics is absolutely going crazy. I'm delighted to tell you that my guest has got an opinion on almost everything. If not everything. His name is David Curtin. He's a London Assembly member and he wants to be the Mayor of London. He joins me now.
Shooting from the lip.
Hi, David.
Hi, John.
Great to have you on board, my friend. Let's start then. Lockdown 2, the sequel. Is it coming?
You know, I really hope it isn't coming, but it looks like it is. And it looks like there are people champing at the bit to impose another lockdown, which is completely unnecessary. It's tyrannical. But, you know, I know this because I talk to people on the grassroots and, you know, I keep my ear to the ground. And a lot of people I know who are working in the NHS, who have got contacts there, they say that, you know, it's looking like it. They just feel that there's something going on, that some things are being set up to have another lockdown. And also people that I, you know, who are close to the police and the police forces, they also, you know, are getting sort of inklings that things are heading that way. So I really think it's wrong. We should be opening everything up again now. It's September. The economy's trashed. Our civil liberties are trashed. We should be doing what Sweden did and coping with this without a lockdown, letting everyone just get on with their lives. But it seems that we're not doing that. And the powers that be behind the scenes, behind the throne, are looking to impose another lockdown. So I hope it doesn't happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does.
Okay, but you say all that, you can't ignore the stats. I know there's more testing. In fact, they've got it to a position now where they can't test it at the moment. But there have been more tests, but there have been more cases. Not necessarily rising deaths, but there's definitely rising cases. And they're largely putting that down on younger people going to the pub. What do you make of that?
Yeah, well, there are more cases, and this is happening across Europe. I don't know about other parts of the world, but there are different reasons for that. One, as you said, there are more tests being done. So with more tests, there are more cases. There's also people are getting tests who haven't got any symptoms. And I think, you know, people would have a go at me for using the wrong language. But, you know, the people who are spreading this narrative that there's more cases and therefore we need to lock down, they are using very inspecific and wrong scientific language. So you have to make a distinction between COVID-19, which is the disease if you have the symptoms, and the virus, which actually is called SARS-CoV-2, and it hasn't actually been isolated and purified in the normal way. But there are lots of people who may have the virus but don't have the symptoms. And they are getting tested and they're being found, you know, to have the virus. But I would say this as well. The test is not specific. It's not 100% specific. So what it does is it looks for a strand of RNA in the sample. Now, that strand of RNA, it could be from SARS-CoV-2, but it could be from another version of coronavirus as well. There are false positive tests, and nobody knows the percentage of tests which are false positives, where people have not got SARS-CoV-2, which causes COVID-19, but because they've got another coronavirus or another strand of RNA, which is similar, which is being picked up as well. So nobody talks about that on any of the mainstream media or any of the discussion programs where people are fear-mongering, but that is the actual fact of the science. So I don't actually think that this is anything to worry about. There's more cases, but they're not because people have got the symptoms.
You say nothing to worry about. Our democratically elected health secretary, Matt Hancock, says, don't go out, young people. You could kill your granny. What do you make of that kind of talk?
Absolute poppycock. And what we've seen with young people is that they're actually going out and having illegal raves and illegal parties, which is an absolute menace. And it's socially, it's creating terrible sort of situations in many of the council estates and so on, where they're having these raves. But the reason for that is because they've closed down the nightclubs, they've closed concert halls, gigs, theatres, everything. So there's nothing for young people to do.
Okay, let me just clarify this, David. You're saying you'd open theatres, music venues, pubs that want to put on bands. What about students? They're going back to college in the next week or so. School kids are already back. Do you think they should be going back to university and doing everything that everybody does at the beginning of Freshers' Week?
Well, I don't know if I would endorse everything that goes on in Freshers' Week in universities, but I certainly think that everything should be opened up again. There should be no restrictions on the economy. There should be no restrictions on our civil liberties and our freedom of assembly. This is absolutely wrong. Look, back in February and March, I was worried because I saw the reports coming out of Wuhan and other places in China, and I thought, my goodness, here's something that is like, it could be as bad as the Black Death, you know, but clearly it isn't. And very, very soon in March, you had this dodgy modelling by Professor Ferguson, which was proved to be wrong. He's actually gone now from his position. And we've got real observed data, which shows that, yes, it's serious, but it's no more serious than a bad flu season. And then this, you know, so everything should be opened up.
Okay, I just want to clarify that. You're saying open everything because you don't think there'll be mass deaths.
Exactly. Yes, that's my position. We should do what Sweden has done. And, you know, this SARS-CoV-2 is going to run its course. And now we've got data from different countries that shows whatever you did, whether you had a really severe lockdown or whether you didn't, pretty much similar things have happened in different countries with different strategies. So now we know that. Let's do what Sweden has done. The virus, it was less harmful overall in Sweden than it was here. They didn't have any lockdown. Belarus as well is another country that didn't have any kind of lockdown, and they didn't fare as badly as here. Let's open everything up, because now we've got 6 months of data which show it isn't going to be like the Black Death. It's just going to have the effect of a bad flu season.
Okay, so why is the government, and Labour are in full agreement as well, why are they locking down? Why are they making people wear masks? You said something about the power behind the throne. You're not into conspiracy, are you?
Well, it's not a conspiracy at all. I mean, you know, the government is taking advice from the World Health Organization. It's taking advice from SAGE. It's taking advice from this Biomedical Research Council. I think that's the name of it that's just been set up to do this. They've got a whole behavioral psychology unit, which is set up in Whitehall. And their job is to try to nudge people to behave in certain ways. So they're actively trying to change and nudge the behavior of the public. That's not conspiracy theory. That's all out in the open. But you know, the term conspiracy theory is laid at the door of anyone who will challenge the official narrative that you're getting from the government and you're getting from the mainstream media. And then they turn around and they try to make out, oh, you're a tinfoil hat nutcase. Well, sorry, I see what's going on, and I don't agree with what you're presenting. What you're presenting is the opposite of you know, what is actually going on.
So when it came to masks, I guess you haven't worn a mask. And when it comes to lockdown too, do you think the general public would observe a curfew, which is one of the suggestions, like they're trying out in Oldham at the moment, where you wouldn't be allowed out after 10 o'clock at night?
I mean, that really is draconian, saying you're not allowed out after 10 o'clock at night. I mean, this is the sort of thing you would do if there's, you know, a civil war or terrorism going on. I mean, this is, you know, you might have this in a Second World War situation, not for a disease which is, you know, relatively minor. It's in terms of the effect of a pandemic. It's absolutely wrong. But, you know, I think a lot of people would obey it. Number one, because there are some people who are afraid of getting a fine and getting into trouble with the police. Many, many people are like that. And this is a law-abiding country. And, you know, so people will take so much. And it pains me to see, you know, it's almost like the government is abusing the population. They're acting against us, but still people will obey the government and do what they say because we do have an innate sort of adherence to obey authority in this country.
Well, you say that, David, but Boris has been desperate to get people to go back to the office. I don't use the word go to work, but go back to the office into London, Birmingham, Manchester, and it hasn't worked. People are voting with their backsides.
Yeah, because they spent months and months ramping up the fear over this thing, using, as I said, Professor Ferguson's dodgy models, where he said 250,000 people to 500,000 people are going to die. And then that was changed. But when it was changed, the public weren't told in any strong manner that it's changed and, okay, there's no need to fear anymore. Go back to work. Let's open everything up. So they've ramped up the fear and they've destroyed and wrecked huge numbers of small and medium-sized businesses and the economies of whole areas, particularly central London, which is dead. And people are still afraid. So you're getting now mixed messages. One, go back to the office. And then two, but you mustn't mix in groups of more than six people, and we're probably going to introduce a curfew. I mean, what do you want? This is absolutely crazy. Mixed messages going on. So nobody knows what on earth the government actually wants us to do. It's not just fear-mongering. It's confusing, and it's nonsensical as well.
Yeah, or either you're thick, David, because you don't understand this virus is really clever. It can spot when you're at work, so you don't catch it there, and it can spot you when you're down the pub with a load of mates. It's a clever, clever virus, David.
I think it is definitely more clever than Matt Hancock.
My desk is cleverer than him. But let's move on. Let's move on from him. Let's go to Boris. He's had a terrible pandemic, hasn't he? We thought he was the new Winston Churchill, but when it comes to a war situation, he ain't up to it, is he?
I don't know what on earth has happened to Boris because, you know, back in December, I didn't vote for him. Obviously, I was still in UKIP at the time and I voted for them, stood for them. But I was happy because he was like, we're going to get Brexit done. We're going to level up. He was just really ebullient, you know, exciting, friendly, guy. And he thought, oh, wonderful. He's so positive. He's going to give us all a lift. But you know what? The thing is with Boris, he is one of the 0.01% of people who did get this thing really, really badly. So he's now treating the 99.99% of the people who haven't got the coronavirus really badly and saying, well, all of you have got to go through, you know, and are at risk of what happened to me. And that simply isn't true. So that's one aspect of it. But, you know, I think he's also got some terrible advisors around him and people who are pushing and pulling him in all sorts of directions because, you know, he's someone that doesn't really, I think, look and pay attention much.
Yeah, he's not a detail man. Yeah.
No, he's not. He appoints people to do certain things. So, you know, for example, he's appointed David Frost to do the negotiations for Brexit. That's a brilliant appointment. And because of that, I think we are going to get a pretty good Brexit, you know, coming. But he's got some other advisors and stuff. I mean, Dominic Cummings, I thought, was okay. But, I mean, what on earth is he up to? I don't know. And, you know, I think he's getting a lot of input from his new girlfriend, fiance, as well. And I'm not sure that that's a particularly good political influence on him either.
Okay, let's talk about the EU in a moment, maybe in the second half of the show. Let's just finish with Boris. Is he going to survive past Christmas?
To be honest, I don't think he's going to be around much after Christmas. You know, I do think that he has this one thing that he's got to do, because this is why people voted for him, to get Brexit done. And, you know, it wasn't done properly in January. It needs to be done properly in December, where we come out not just in name only, but from all the institutions, and we are fully free. I think it will happen. I really hope it happens, and I hope that we don't get betrayed on that. But, you know, we will get a no-deal Brexit, essentially. But if that happens, what else is there for him to do? Because everything else is just absolutely wrong. It's the opposite of what you voted for him for. I mean, he's supposed to be a conservative, and everything that's happening from this government is anti-conservative.
He's also meant to be a libertarian.
Yeah, well, he's not being much of a libertarian because he's taken away all our civil liberties. So, you know, all these two things that he's supposed to be, he's doing the opposite of them. So, you know, what's the point of Boris now? You know, basically, for 1 year, he's gone right down the tubes. I think a lot of people, even in his own party, have a lot of disquiet about this, and privately are saying, you know, this is not what we expected. And, you know, to be honest, I don't think he's going to be around much longer after December. That's my feeling.
Okay, David, thank you for giving me the title for the show. What's the point of Boris? We'll leave it there. That's the first half of the show. Don't dare go away. You're listening to the John Gaunt Show. It's Shooting from the Lip, Sputnik International. My special guest, David Curtin, London Assembly member. We're going to talk about Sadiq Khan in the second half. We're going to talk about Donald Trump. He's up for Nobel Peace Prize. And we're going to talk about the EU in more detail. All coming up on the John Gaunt Show, Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik International. Don't you dare go away.
Shooting from the Lip.
We're taking no prisoners here.
Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, Shooting from the Lip.
Okay, ding ding, round two, the second half of Shooting from the Lip. Let's see if he can be as opinionated in this half of the show as he was in the first. David Curtin, do you think we're going to be out of the EU in 30-odd days? And is it going to be with a deal, or are we going to walk? Is this all just talk and bluster at the moment, or is Frost determined?
I think Frost is a good man, and I think that he is someone who wants to do this properly. And yeah, at the end of the day, it would be good to get a trade deal where we have zero tariffs and zero quotas on goods and services, but also where we don't have to give the EU any money, and where we're not subject to their directives and regulations any longer. And certainly, we have full control over our fishing waters. There's no reason why we can't have that. It would be mutually beneficial. I think David Frost wants to do that kind of deal. But I think, of course, you know, the EU and Barnier, they want to get and keep hold of our fish and our fishing waters. And they, you know, they would do a zero tariff trade deal, but they would want us to put loads of conditions on us where we continue to have to obey the EU's rules. That is not a good deal. So if we can't do that, we need to walk away with no deal. I think Frost would want to do that, but I wonder about Boris, and I wonder about many of the other people at the top of the Conservative Party that might block that as well.
Do you have any worries about the so-called breaking of the law, of international law?
Well, we shouldn't really be breaking international law. But the thing is, I mean, the deal, this withdrawal agreement deal, I was always against, you know, that we did in on the 31st of January. I mean, it's odious with the Northern Ireland Protocol, where Northern Ireland's going to be half in the UK and half in the EU. There's so much uncertainty about what borders are going to be where for trade and customs and all these kind of things. So, you know, the EU break rules and they break laws as well. So, you know, if we do it, we're not doing anything differently to the EU in terms of trade. So, you know, I'm not concerned particularly about that.
OK, so if we get out of the EU, we're going to need trade deals. Here's the next controversy. Was it right to appoint Mr. Tony Abbott, former Prime Minister of Australia? Kay Burley definitely thinks it's wrong, but no one ever elected her. What do you think? Is he a homophobe? Is he a misogynist? And even if he was, with these comments 8 years ago, does it matter?
He's a great man, and it's a great appointment. I'm really pleased that Tony Abbott is on the Board of Trade and is going to be representing this country, because he's got fantastic experience as a statesman and also in terms of doing trade negotiations. And yeah, this is just perpetuating a narrative and a smear. I mean, this is what Kay Burley said. Oh, but he's a homophobic misogynist or something. You know what? He is for traditional marriage, thinks marriage is a man and a woman. Well, I am. I think that as well. So if he's a homophobe, then I'm a homophobe as well. But I mean, this is the kind of smear that people put out if you don't have the right political opinion on something that is completely unrelated to what you're talking about. I mean, you know, an opinion on marriage has got nothing to do with his ability to make good trade deals for the country.
You say Abbott is the right man. Some people are saying we need Farage back in frontline politics. We'll go on to Dover and migrants in a moment, but do you regret the fact that he stepped down? I mean, the Brexit Party was never a proper party, we understand. But is there a need for a new party of the right?
I really do think there is a need for a new party. And yeah, I think there's not just a need, there's a hunger for it. There's a clamour for a new party. The Brexit Party was fantastic as a single issue party to get rid of Theresa May and win the European elections. But you know, that's been deactivated now. They're still sending around a few emails, which is okay. But I really do think that we need a proper socially conservative party that stands for free speech and liberty with the whole coronavirus issue, national sovereignty with the Brexit issue, traditional family values that's pro-life, that stands for financial responsibility so that we don't fund all of these ridiculous things, you know, like the EU and HS2, and we spend our money on the police and hospitals and schools and don't get into debt, and protecting our environment, our urban environment, making sure we don't ruin the countryside, and also that we have low immigration and proper border force controls.
Hang on a minute. That sounds like a manifesto. Are you going to form a party?
That's defining social conservatism. Look, you caught me there. I am working on a new party, and I'm working on something and looking to get something approved by the Electoral Commission. So I haven't made any announcement yet, but if I do get approval for something, I will make an announcement. So that's something I have been thinking of for a while, and it's something that I am working on, yes.
And that's interesting. And of course, you want to stand against Khan. What do you make of Khan during this period? Mayor Khan, he sent out a video about London dying. He seemed to have forgotten that he increased the congestion charge and extended its period, and black cabbies hate him at the moment. What do you think of Mayor Khan?
He talks about London dying, but I mean, what he didn't say is he's the main culprit in London's death. As well as Boris Johnson and the government, they seem to be working together, taking in turns to bash London with a baseball bat, metaphorically. I mean, you've got the congestion charge being applied at weekends and in the evenings, which is smashing trade, tradesmen, service vehicles, delivery vehicles having to pay to do business. That's really hurting them. His so-called street space scheme, which is making less space on the roads for vehicles. So taxis and buses and emergency vehicles are getting stuck in major queues, causing congestion and more pollution. And all of these low traffic neighbourhoods, which are being put in by the boroughs, but Sadiq Khan and Grant Shapps in the government are supporting these. Basically, the people in the boroughs where they live are up in arms because you're getting loads of neighbourhoods are being sealed off with bollards and big plant boxes so that vehicles can't get in and out except by one entrance. And so this is killing businesses in the neighbourhoods. All of this is going on. London is an absolute disaster in terms of road chaos. Also, you've got massive rise in crime as well. And the police are taking a knee to Black Lives Matter. I saw a demonstration marching down Whitehall yesterday. I was sitting in the pub and a few hundred Extinction Rebellion people went past. And the police did nothing to stop it, even though technically it's illegal under the coronavirus regulation.
Well, they also did nothing when they stopped newspapers being distributed this week. What did you make of that? And then compare and contrast that with the £10,000 fine that Piers Corbyn got for having an anti-mask rally. It doesn't seem fair to me.
There's no consistencies. You know, if you're in one of these, you know, lovey-dovey, these groups beloved of the liberal, or as I call it, the illiberal elite, you know, if you're in Black Lives Matter or Extinction Rebellion, you can seem to do whatever on earth you like and get away with it without much happening to you at all. But, you know, if you're protesting for your freedom, for your civil liberties, if you're Piers Corbyn, you get arrested and you get a £10,000 fine.
Okay, so what would you do if you were suddenly Priti Patel?
I would beef up the border force from three little tugs patrolling 7,000 miles of coastline to about 600 or 700. That's what we need. We need to get the Royal Navy in. We also need to get out of the Dublin 3 regulations, which mean that if someone comes to Britain, it is very, very hard to send them back to France or somewhere else, because this comes back to what we said before with the withdrawal agreement. So we've agreed for the 11 months of this year to stay in all the EU regulations, including the asylum system. We need to get out of those regulations. We need to repudiate them. And then we need to set up Australian-style offshore holding for people who are coming illegally. When Australia did it, the boat stopped coming. That's what we need to do in the UK as well.
Okay, a metaphorical wall, a bit like Mr. Trump. What do you make of the breaking news? He's been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize for what he's done with Israel and indeed with the UAE. Do you applaud that?
Fantastic. I mean, President Trump, he is a peacemaker. You know, he deserves a Nobel Prize far more than Obama did. When Obama got a Nobel Prize right at the very beginning of his presidency, before he'd even done anything, just simply because of the color of his skin. That's not a reason to give someone a Nobel Prize. You give someone a Nobel Peace Prize because they've actually made peace. And Obama went on to drop 26,000 bombs in the Middle East on lots of different countries, messed up Libya, messed up Syria and all these other places, whereas Trump has actually been making peace, first in Korea and now between Israel and the UAE, and then also Serbia and Kosovo. I mean, he is an incredible peacemaker, and Trump is an incredible force for good in this world. You wouldn't see that on the BBC, but he is.
Okay, you've got 60 seconds. We've got you mentioned it a moment ago, we've got a new Director General of the BBC. He's making some positive sounds, as far as I can see. I don't think he's going to save the BBC. I don't think he's going to stop the defund the BBC campaign. What do you think? 60 seconds, David Curtin.
Well, it's too little, too late, isn't it? It's like an organisation, I call them the Britain-bashing commies, because that's what they are. They still are that, and it's like they put a little teddy bear in front and said, oh, look, we've got a nice little teddy bear who likes you now, but behind it, you know that most people in there hate this country. They're against the ordinary people. They're blatantly biased. You've still got articles going on their website that are against Trump, but obviously blatantly biased, that are throwing smears at people who are against wearing masks and against lockdown and this kind of thing. I think it's irredeemable, and it needs to be split up and sold off.
And finally, you mentioned earlier that we're living in a tyranny. Do you think democracy is at stake here?
Yes, it is. And what shocks me is the number of laws which are now being made by decree, by statutory instrument, that are being passed and pushed through with no debate in Parliament and no vote by MPs.
Okay.
And, you know, this is going on a massive scale, and people need to wake up to it.
Thank you very much indeed. That's David Curtin with his views, but I love him. You don't have to agree with him, by the way. He just shoots from the lip. He tells you what he really thinks. And that's refreshing, isn't it, in British politics? I'll be back with another guest who hopefully will be almost as forthright as David Curtin. But until then, you have been listening to The John Gaunt Show, Sputnik International, shooting from the lip, with my special guest, Mr. David Curtin. Thanks for listening.
Shooting from the lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting From The Lip.